Why? Said the man in the shop. This is a tricky one. Okay, skip that, said the man in the shop. How? Well, I was hoping you could help me with that. The man sighed and his shoulders dropped. Have you much experience of computers? Arthur wondered whether to mention Eddie, the shipboard computer on the Heart of Gold, who would have done the job in a second, or Deep Thought, or... But he decided he wouldn't. No, he said. Looks like a fun afternoon, said the man in the shop, but he said it only to himself. Arthur bought the Apple anyway. Over a few days, he also acquired some astronomical software, plotted the movements of stars, drew rough little diagrams of how he seemed to remember the stars to have been in the sky when he looked up out of his cave at night, and worked away busily at it for weeks, cheerfully putting off the conclusion he knew he would inevitably have to come to, which was that the whole project was completely ludicrous. Rough drawings from memory were futile. He didn't even know how long it had been beyond Ford Prefect's rough guess at the time that it was a couple of million years, and he simply didn't have the maths. Still, in the end, he worked out a method which would at least produce a result. He decided not to mind the fact that with the extraordinary jumbles of rules of thumb, wild approximations and arcane guesswork he was using, he'd be lucky to hit the right galaxy. He just went ahead and got a result. He would call it the right result. Who would know? As it happened, through the myriad and unfathomable chances of fate, he got it exactly right, though of course he would never know that. He just went up to London and knocked on the appropriate door. Oh, I thought you were going to phone me first. Arthur gaped in astonishment. You can only come in for a few minutes, said Fenchurch. I'm just going out. Chapter 18. A summer's day in Islington, full of the mournful wail of antique restoring machinery. Fenchurch was unavoidably busy for the afternoon, so Arthur wandered in a blissed-out haze and looked at all the shops, which in Islington are quite a useful bunch, as anyone who regularly needs old woodworking tools, Boer War helmets, drag, office furniture or fish will readily confirm. The sun beat down over the roof gardens. It beat on architects and plumbers. It beat on barristers and burglars. It beat on pizzas. It beat on estate agents' particulars. It beat on Arthur as he went into a restored furniture shop. It's an interesting building, said the proprietor cheerfully. There's a cellar with a secret passage which connects with a nearby pub. It was built for the Prince Regent, apparently, so he could make his escape when he needed to. You mean in case anyone might catch him buying strip pine furniture, said Arthur. No, said the proprietor, not for that reason. You'll have to excuse me, said Arthur. I'm terribly happy. I see. He wandered hazily on and found himself outside the offices of Greenpeace. He remembered the contents of his file marked Things to Do, Urgent, which he hadn't opened again in the meantime. He marched in with a cheery smile and said he'd come to give them some money to help free the dolphins. Very funny, they told him. Go away. This wasn't quite the response he'd expected, so he tried again. This time they got quite angry with him, so he just left some money anyway and went back out into the sunshine. Just after six, he returned to Fenchurch's house in the alleyway, clutching a bottle of champagne. Hold this, she said, shoved a stout rope in his hands, and disappeared inside the large white wooden doors from which dangled a fat padlock off a black iron bar. The house was a small converted stable in a light industrial alleyway behind the derelict Royal Agricultural Hall of Islington. As well as its large stable doors, it also had a normal-looking front door of smartly glazed panelled wood with a black dolphin door knocker. The one odd thing about this door was its doorstep, which was 9 feet high, since the door was set into the upper of the two floors and presumably had been originally used to haul in hay for hungry horses. An old pulley jutted out of the brickwork above the doorway, and it was over this that the rope Arthur was holding was slung. The other end of the rope held a suspended cello. The door opened above his head. "Okay," said Fenchurch, "pull on the rope, steady the cello, pass it up to me." He pulled on the rope, he steadied the cello. "I can't pull on the rope again," he said, "without letting go of the cello." Fenchurch leant down. "I'm steadying the cello," she said, "you pull on the rope." The cello eased up level with the doorway, swinging slightly, and Fenchurch manoeuvred it inside. "Come on up yourself," she called down. Arthur picked up his bag of goodies and went in through the stable doors, tingling. The bottom room, which he had seen briefly before, was pretty rough and full of junk. A large old cast-iron mangle stood there. A surprising number of kitchen sinks were piled in a corner. There was also, Arthur was momentarily alarmed to see, a pram, but it was very old and uncomplicatedly full of books. The floor was old stained concrete, excitingly cracked, and this was the measure of Arthur's mood as he started up the rickety wooden steps in the far corner. Even a cracked concrete floor seemed to him an almost unbearably sensual thing. "An architect friend of mine keeps on telling me how he can do wonderful things with this place," said Fenchurch chattily, as Arthur emerged through the floor. "He keeps on coming round, standing in stunned amazement, muttering about space and objects and events and marvellous qualities of light, then says he needs a pencil and disappears for weeks. Wonderful things have therefore so far failed to happen." In fact, thought Arthur as he looked about, the upper room was at least reasonably wonderful anyway. It was simply decorated, furnished with things made out of cushions, and also a stereo set with speakers which would have impressed the guys who put up Stonehenge. There were flowers which were pale, and pictures which were interesting. There was a sort of gallery structure in the roof space which held a bed and also a bathroom which, Fenchurch explained, you could actually swing a cat in, but, she added, only if it was a reasonably patient cat and didn't mind a few nasty cracks about the head. "So, here you are." "Yes." They looked at each other for a moment.